court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia. Two Dudes Perspective on Legal Frivolity. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude.
Well, after stepping outside of our comfort zone last week with kind of a controversial opinionated episode, I figured we should maybe lighten the mood a little bit.
Yeah, we might as well. I mean, I think it's okay to be controversial now and then. We knew what we were stepping into. We knew what this gig was when we got into it. We've avoided it up till now, but sometimes things happen that you just gotta speak up. Right, wrong, or indifferent. We're not saying our opinions are right or whatever, but you know, they are what they are. And it's like I made a point in the post that you could even tell you and I didn't agree exactly on what things should be, but there's a way to have civil discourse without yelling and screaming and insisting everyone else see things the way you do.
Yeah, I mean, we yelled and screamed after the microphones went off and got into a fist fight. That's how you do it.
Maybe in the old days, but I'm too old for that now. Well, I just fall over.
Well, anyway, to light it up, we decided, hey, Lou, pack up bags. We're going back to school.
Oh, no. Is that Rodney Dangerfield?
Yeah. Rodney Dangerfield impersonation.
What happened? Somebody step on a duck? That's what I expect somebody to say every time Donald Trump gets up from a table. Hey, what happened? Somebody step on a duck?
So this, we're going to talk about law school. And this was suggested by a couple of just different listeners. Tierney Steele Callahan and Sean Christian Sims both suggested this at one point or another.
What's with all these three-namers?
I don't know, and there's some tricky ones in there, too.
Yeah.
Well, Sean Christian Sims is not too bad, but...
It's not like Sean Christian Anderson.
Yeah. Tierney. I think I got that one right.
First priest I ever had kid was Father Tierney, yeah.
Father Tierney at Our Lady Fatima.
Yeah, man, he ruled with an iron fist.
I heard he was tough.
He was. You came in late, he let you know about it. All you slipping in the back of the church late, you don't think I don't see you...
He said that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he would call you out. he was a tough bird. He'd let you know.
He was a hanging priest.
Yeah, he was.
I don't think I'd like to go to confession with him.
No. You did a lot of Our Fathers and Hail Marys. And I even remember one time he made me go out and rake the front yard.
Did he really?
Yeah.
As penance?
Yeah. He said, say so many of these and so many of these and then go rake the front yard. He said the rake's already out there from the last guy.
Oh, rake the rectory's front yard?
No, it was actually the church's front
yard. Oh, the church's?
Yeah, I had just do half. He sent some other kid out there to do his penance and rake half of it, and he left the other half in the rake out there for me.
That must have been God's will.
He must have seen me coming. Well, we are all, what do they say? We're all God's instruments or something like that?
Yeah.
So, something to that effect. I'm just his leaf rake.
Well, in order to be a lawyer in the United States, to start off with, you have to, we'll start from the bare basics. You have to graduate high school first.
Okay.
So you graduate high school.
Bar's not too high yet.
You can get a GED.
Okay.
Once you do that, you have to have a four-year college degree. So you have to graduate from college.
All right.
Now, it could be your four-year college degree. It takes you 4.5 or 5 years, like it did me.
I took 6, but I got married halfway through, and that slowed me down.
There you go. And while you're in school, you can study different things. Now, it used to be you didn't actually have to go to school to become a lawyer. You could do something that was called reading the law. Have you ever heard that term before?
Well, not exactly, but if I remember right from our episode, Alexander Hamilton didn't go to law school, did he?
No, I believe he read the law.
Yeah, read all the books and basically impressed enough high-ranking lawyers that they made him a lawyer.
Yeah, it used to be that basically you studied under a lawyer or a judge, and then at some point you basically became a lawyer.
But they didn't have the bar then.
No. In the 1890s, the American Bar Association, which was formed in 1878, began to start pressing states to kind of limit admission to the bar, and it required some sort of postgraduate study. So the last justice of the Supreme Court was James F. Byrnes, and he was the last justice appointed who had actually never attended law school. He read for law. So until up to 1941. So, I mean, the whole law school and bar thing is kind of newer, I guess, in, you know, less than 150 years, right?
Yeah. What's that? 1890.
It was really when the Bar Association started kind of moving towards this.
Yeah.
So now there's still some jurisdictions, according to what I read, that you can actually not attend law school, but take the bar exam after reading the law under a judge or practicing attorney for a period of time.
You say that's certain states?
Yeah. California, Vermont, Virginia, and Washington were the states that I've looked at. And I don't know exactly the rules for that. I'd never heard that before until I was kind of researching this whole reading the law thing. Cause that's all news to me. Because I had to go to law school, but...
Well, it would be cheaper. Cut down on your student loans.
Yeah.
So that's a good thing.
Yeah, but I mean, it's kind of an interesting way to do it, you know, I guess it's like on-the-job type training. But, I mean, I don't know. I kind of am of the opinion, I think you should have to go to law school. I mean, I had to do it, so I think you should have to do it too. So there.
Well, I understand that reasoning. By God, I put in my time. You need to put in your time as well.
Exactly. But that's for postgraduate study. Now, I still think probably even if you're reading the law in those jurisdictions, you probably still have to have an undergraduate degree, some sort of college degree, essentially.
Well, what difference would it make if you did or not?
Well,
I mean, if you've passed the bar, you pass the bar. What can going back and taking, you know, English 101 do for you? Make you talk good?
I talk good. We have judges here in West Virginia. They're called magistrate judges, and they took over. It was the old justice of the peace system.
Right.
And the only qualifications to be a magistrate judge
is you have to be breathing.
They have a high school degree or a GED.
Yeah. Well, that's not a college degree.
No.
If you ask me, that whole system is a joke system.
Well, it's meant to deal with lesser issues. The real problem comes in whenever you have felony preliminary cases and hearings like that, sometimes in front of magistrate judges, that can be a little problematic because you can get into some pretty deep legal issues and you're arguing them before a judge who
has no experience, basically.
Right. Now, I mean, if they've been a magistrate for a good amount of time and they know what they're doing, then you're fine. Well, but I mean,
seniority isn't everything.
Yeah. Well, but I'm saying you could basically go in there before a magistrate who just got elected and they've never been to law school. I mean, they've been to a magistrate training course, which is probably like a month or something at the Supreme Court. So
I've met some of these magistrates and they are straight up dumbasses. That's not an opinion. That's a fact. Well,
as an attorney who practices in front of them, I'm going to disagree with you.
Well, that's probably smart for you, but I don't have to. I'm the person that elects them. Unfortunately, yeah. I have to vote for these people.
I do think the ones we have here in Cabell County, though, and also Wayne County, the ones I appear in front of mostly, I do like all of them. I think they're pretty good, but there are some horror stories out there.
I'd say that if I were you too. I've witnessed a few cases that magistrates are ruling in, and as far as I'm concerned, they just don't have any business. Now, I'm not saying there aren't some good ones, and there are some ones that are smart, but they don't have a legal background.
Well,
and if I've been arrested and I'm being brought before somebody, whether I'm guilty or innocent, I want somebody that knows what they're doing to be the one passing judgment on me, because that's what they do. They're the jury and the judge right there. I mean, I know they don't sentence you to jail, but they kind of decide preliminarily what's going to happen to you.
Well, they can for misdemeanors. They'll sentence you to jail for that. So
there you go. And they don't even have a background. Some of them just got up off the couch and went and registered to run for office.
And you can appeal pretty quickly to circuit court here in West Virginia. So that's one good thing, is that if you're unhappy with a magistrate decision, the appeal process to circuit court is really quick. So, and you know, they do get overturned if they've done something pretty egregious. So, you know, I mean, that's one safeguard you have there at least. So that's good.
Well, I won't get into details, but I had to be a witness in a case one time that we went in and it was before the magistrate, and I was just awestruck at the line of questioning and the answers and the way that this magistrate talked. It was just unbelievable. I walked out of there laughing, and I thought, I'm glad I was not the guy. I'm glad I was a witness and not the guy on trial.
So when you're going to undergraduate for your college degree, you can get different kinds of degrees. There's not any kind of degree you have to have in order to go to law school.
Because you always hear people are in pre-law.
Yeah. Pre-law is something that not many people, that's a lot of people
pre-law
take.
Means you're drinking a lot.
Yeah. Political science is another common one for lawyers.
Right.
And, but there's a lot of, law school is actually like people with non-traditional degrees that apply. And I think a really good one is an engineering degree. I think that's kind of a good degree to get. In
really?
Yeah. And if you take that, it's kind of diverse and it makes you stand out in the crowd if you're applying to law school. Because if you're applying to law school, there's thousands of people with political science degrees. But if you have something different like that, it might pique somebody's interest. Be like, oh, this guy's engineering degree. I wonder what that is. There's actually another good reason to do an engineering degree as well, which I'll touch on a little bit later. But that comes later on when you're applying for bar exams and things like that.
I've heard of some lawyers that are both lawyers and doctors and specialize in medical cases.
Yeah, you can do both. And they're actually... I've been to...
They don't practice medicine per se. They're lawyers, but they have a medical degree, and then that helps them trying medical cases, I guess, malpractice and such.
Yeah, I could see where that could be a thing. And also, you know, feather and cap, I'm a doctor and a lawyer.
That's a lot of school.
It is a lot of school.
Man, I mean, you'd be like 40 by the time you got out.
Well, you can. There's actually accelerated programs where you can do both at the same time.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Some schools have a joint JD-MD program.
Wow.
So...
You got to be smart to do that.
It'd be a lot of work.
I barely made it through undergrad.
So once you get towards the end of your undergrad career and you decide that you want to go to law school, or your mother decides it for you and tells you you have to go.
Is that the way it happened for you?
It may have been, yeah.
So you're a plead the fifth?
Yeah. You have to take the LSAT, which is the law school admissions test. And that is a half-day test. And it's given four times a year. Actually, I read it's going to be given six times a year starting in 2018. So they're going to be even giving more of them.
They need more lawyers out there.
I don't think so, but that's my opinion.
All the drug stuff going up, they need more lawyers. Look how they're running you to death. You just started here less than a year ago. You got so many cases, you don't know what to do with them.
Yeah, I got cases coming out of my ears.
I know.
So the LSAT consists of different sections. One is a reading comprehension section. One's an analytical reasoning section. And there's two logical reasoning sections, which are called the games sections. And then here's the funny thing. There's an unscored section, which is referred to as the variable section. And that's used to pretest a new test that they are thinking about using in the future. So you're kind of like their guinea pig as well.
So they want to see what happens on that, but it has no bearing on how you do.
Right. But you don't really know which one's which. So you got to do well on all of them. And then there's also an essay section, which they'll send in your essays to whatever law school, like a kind of a writing sample type thing. So it's a lot of reading and it's a pretty reading intensive. So you have to read a lot, and the questions and the passages might not have anything to do with law. Actually, they usually don't. They're about just some story and you have to answer questions about it. It's got lots of big words and stuff in there that makes it hard to read. So,
and at what point do you finally get your seeds?
Your seeds?
Yeah, where you plant your money tree in the backyard and it starts growing?
Oh, that comes later.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. You told me enough about that. I figured at some point we hear where you get your seeds.
It's gifted. When you pass the, once you actually graduate from law school, when they shake your hand, it's in the handshake that they give you.
Well, they slide them in there. Yeah. Oh, man, I've got to look closer.
So the range for the LSAT is 120 to 180. And I read recently that the average is about 150. And I think I knew people that scored higher than that and some scored lower than that. So, I mean, depending on what you get in the LSAT, with the combination of your GPA and where you went to school is kind of what law schools look at as far as admissions. So, obviously, you want to score higher on the LSAT as you can, and you want to get a better GPA if you can as well.
Well, it depends. I mean, if you're wanting to get into the best law schools or something, then that's important. But maybe you've got one that's just in your neighborhood that's not great, but it's still a law school. And once you get your degree, I mean... Once you graduate law school and pass the bar, you're a lawyer, regardless of where you went.
That's true, yeah. But if you're trying to find jobs as well, which the job market for lawyers is pretty tight these days, and you want to be more competitive for getting jobs, then you might want to go to a better, more prestigious law school. And the whole thing, I mean, law school is super competitive. People want to go to the best law schools.
Harvard Law School.
Yeah, exactly.
Is that considered the best, Harvard?
Probably, yeah. think Harvard Law School is probably the best.
I don't really know any other ones. That's all I know of.
Yeah. Most of the, it seemed to have quite a few law professors that went to Harvard.
Yeah. It sounds pretentious anyway.
Yeah.
And you can, and you don't have to say Harvard. You can say Harvard.
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 So now, assuming you have a good enough LSAT score and a good enough GPA, and you get into a law school, and you go to law school, well, then what do you expect? Well, before classes even start, you will get a syllabus with reading assignments, and you are expected to come to the very first class ready to rock and roll. And there's no downtime. It's like, come in, start calling on you right then.
Man, I can see the way I'd be. The night before the first class, I'd be reading all those books or whatever they sent you.
Well, you don't have to read the whole book. It's usually broken up in different cases. Hmm. And the way law school goes is it uses what's called the Socratic method.
Is that named after Socrates?
It is.
Well, I picked right up on that, didn't I? Do yeah. I pass? Am I a lawyer?
And Socratic debate is a form of a kind of cooperative argumentative dialogue between a teacher and a student. And usually it's based on asking and answering questions, and it stimulates critical thinking to draw out ideas and underlying presumptions. So that's like the basis of it. It's like you ask questions, and then those questions lead into debate. So it's called the Socratic method. And that's what law school essentially is the Socratic method.
I think that's what's lacking today on a lot of Facebook forums.
Yeah.
Socratic method. Yeah. Draw out the debate and answer it back. And it's all in a civil manner, I'll assume.
I don't know. There are a couple of law professors that I didn't think were too civil. They scared the bejesus out of me.
Well, that was their job. They were making sure you knew it was serious.
That's probably true.
Lawyering's hard.
And then the one thing they always ask you about the different cases, because you're reading cases and you're briefing cases. And a case brief in law school is usually done, and that was how I did it in my law school, what's called the IRAC method.
IRAC?
Yep, IRAC. And it's essentially kind of a way to organize your answer to a question and how to analyze a case. And it stands for Issue, Rule, Analysis, and Conclusion. So basically, you spot what the issue is in the case, you identify what the rule is in that case, then you kind of analyze how that rule works with the different facts of the case, and then you come to a conclusion as to what it is. And that's basically what the IRAC method is, and that's kind of one of the underpinnings of law school, and along with the Socratic method, kind of what everyday life is like in law school.
Well, to me, that sounds fun. I mean, to be able to go through that process. So you're not going and reading other cases to cite other cases. You're actually going through the logic yourself of what's involved in it.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, you're reading a case and you're trying to spot issues and find rules.
Because there may be multiple things, but what they're asking you to do is determine what is the main point of this.
Yeah. It's like they give you a case and they say, read this case and
what does it turn on?
I rack it.
Yeah.
Why are you reading this case?
Mm-hmm.
So, and you're supposed to basically brief these cases yourself and not use anything else, but there are tons and tons of study aids out there. Really, when I went to law school,
is it like a Cliff Notes for IRAC? Cliff Notes,
and they would one was called Emanuel's, I think, and it was like basically keyed to the different case books and had all the case briefs already in it, and it had outlines and whatnot in there. But the professors always said, "Don't use those because they're bad." So we want you to think.
Yeah, just like they said, don't read the Cliff Notes because they're wrong. Yeah. They just wanted you to do it. It wasn't because there's anything wrong with it.
Well, stupidly, I listened to them and didn't ever buy any of those books. So.
They were called Emanuel's?
I think Emanuel's was the name of one of them. It had a picture of a guy with like a wig, like you would imagine Lodowick to be on the front cover, like a cartoon drawing.
What? And that sounds, it seems like that was the name of an old softcore porn series, Emanuel. And it was Emanuel 2.
It was on Skinamax.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember those. From
wasn't that what it was, Emanuel?
I actually never saw any of them.
You did?
That was on Friday after dark. Well, I was not allowed to watch Cinemax. Friday nights after dark.
Well, I didn't actually have that channel, but if you move the rabbit ears around just right, you could get enough of the static to break up where you could every once in a while spot a boob.
I think one of the other books besides Emanuel's was Gilbert's. So
Gilbert's? I think Gilbert so. And Sullivan's?
Yeah, I don't know. So, but you really didn't want to do that because it's kind of a shortcut. It may help you in the short term, but really you want to learn how to reason and do this.
So. Right. You're going to be a better lawyer if you can go through that process yourself. If you're dependent on the Cliff Notes, life has no Cliff Notes.
Yeah. So law school is generally 3 years, and you take 18 hours a semester, And if you take summer school, it can be over sooner than that. Some schools actually do part-time, like night school and things like that. Traditionally, though, it was always just 3 years and you went full-time and there wasn't any kind of part-time study for it. But with people being non-traditional students and going as a second career and things like that, law schools have started offering night classes and that kind of stuff. Now, your first year is, you don't really have any choice of what classes you take. It's very strict. You take these classes, and that's pretty much it. Your second year, it's pretty much standard as well, but you start being able to take a few electives for some different areas. In your third year, there's some required classes as well, but by that time, you're taking quite a few electives depending on which kind of area of law interests you, so you can kind of study different things.
What are the basic areas of law to go into?
Oh, I mean, there's tons. There's so many classes.
Oh, so I didn't know if there was just like, you know, six or seven general fields, or is it just there's all kinds? It depends on how specialized things get. Because I know you've mentioned before there's like trademark ones and there's patent ones. And
yeah, well, I mean, your first year you take, you take property law, contract law, legal research and writing is a class you take, which is actually, that teaches you how to write briefs and write different things like you would have to as a lawyer.
Legal briefs?
Yeah, legal briefs. And that was actually a pretty interesting class because that was how you learned to do legal research. And when I went to law school, you actually had to do it with actual books.
Books. Yeah. Now it's on the computer.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I haven't been to law school in quite some time, so I don't know how they teach
you. It's got to be. Everything
well,
is.
I could see where they would still teach you. And I mean, actually, I was able to use internet-based research, but not until the second semester. So I kind of was in that little area, that gray area, maybe where you might have learned both because the internet stuff was just kind of catching on a little bit. So I learned how to do, like, look at digest first, then go from there. But then once you were able to use the internet-based search, I mean, I can't even tell you the last time I actually picked up a book. So, I mean, there's a couple actual case books I have just because they have some of my favorite cases in them. They're kind of funny. But those are the ones on my shelf that I even look at. So it used to be that I told you law students are super competitive. So it used to be in these legal research and writing classes that you would have assignments like where you're supposed to almost like a treasure hunt, go find this kind of case and whatever. And it was not uncommon for students to find those books and then go hide those books so nobody else could find them. So nobody else would be able to complete the assignment
or tear out the pages that were, you know, the ones you were looking for.
Yeah. I mean, that would not be unheard of.
And that is the first essence of someone becoming a lawyer right there.
Yeah.
Screw the other guy.
Yeah.
That's it.
Well, no, there are some.
That's where they start removing the morals from the lawyers as they go.
Well, it very quickly I identified who in law school I was going to be friends with and who I was not going to be friends with. So people, you know, the joke is they're called gunners. They're gunning. They always have their hand up and
yeah.
They always want to say like, well, you know, in my personal experience, blah, blah, blah. And you're just like, shut up. So,
but we don't care about your personal experience.
Yeah.
Well, cite the law.
Yeah. Who cares about
I am the law.
Who cares about your anecdotal story?
See, if you just had Sylvester Stallone with you the whole time, that you'd always be right because he is the law.
Did you see the new Judge Dredd movie?
No, I haven't seen it.
It was really good. I mean, really, really good.
Who played Judge Dredd in this one?
It was the same guy that played in the new Star Trek. That, I think. Maybe. See the new Star Trek?
Not Chris Pine.
No. Maybe he wasn't in Star Trek. I don't know. Some dark-haired dude. But he was really good.
The dark-haired dude is really good, huh?
Yeah.
Well, go see the dark-haired dude that's really good in Judge Dredd.
The new Judge Dredd.
I don't know. You can't beat Sylvester Stallone.
Well, this was a better movie. I'll just leave it at that.
I believe that.
So in addition to contract law, property law, legal research and writing, there's criminal law, there's criminal procedure, civil procedure is another big class, which is civil cases, constitutional law. I think usually you take con law. I think you should take it your first year, maybe your second year.
Now, if you specialized in constitutional law, what would you probably be aiming at doing? I mean, is that someone who argues before the Supreme Court a lot? Or, I mean, why would you specialize in that?
Well, if you have aspirations of arguing before the Supreme Court, you would definitely want to specialize or take more classes on that. But then in addition, I think you would want to get some sort of clerkship with a federal judge or something like that, or with the Supreme Court if you could. that's how generally you get in front of the Supreme Court and get to be one of the people who is traditionally argues in front of the Supreme Court. Because I think there's, my understanding is there's not many attorneys that actually argue in front of the Supreme Court. It seems to be like certain ones do it over and over and over again because they're the ones who are usually there.
And the other reason may be because you want to be one of these federal judges or higher, something like that. So you study that so you can clerk with them and then argue cases before them and eventually maybe become one, huh?
Yeah, that would be, yeah, it'd be a good way to do that.
So you got to figure out kind of what it is you want to do with your lawyerhood when you come out of there, huh? What kind of a practice you're going to be or what your aspirations are to a certain extent.
Well, I mean, to a certain degree. When I started taking electives, I mean, I kind of took classes that fit into my schedule that I thought were kind of interesting. For example, I took federal income tax. It wasn't a required class. In some schools, it actually is a required class. And I think that's probably why I took it. It's a very hard class to take.
Well, that's another specialty, isn't it? Aren't some people lawyers and CPAs?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's one that can be in great demand, especially for big businesses and stuff.
I mean, I had no aspirations of doing tax law, but I wanted to take that class because I knew it was hard. I knew other lawyers out there took it, so I figured I better take it too, just so I can say, oh, I took federal income tax. So
my name's H&R Block.
Yeah. I took one class. It was called sports law. It had a lot to do with like agency and things like that.
Well, that'd be a good one if you wanted to be an agent.
Yeah. Yep.
Because a lot of agents are lawyers.
Yeah. I took a workers' compensation class, which dealt with only workers' compensation law. I took that my very last semester of law school and didn't go very often and got the worst grade of my law school career in that class.
Really?
And then I immediately got a job as a workers' comp attorney right out of law school, which is kind of funny.
Well, they probably don't have them beating down the door to work in that.
Well, you know, it was like any job I could get. I had to start paying those bills.
Hey, look, D is a passing grade. So as long as you get a D and you pass, you're still a lawyer. Yeah. There's A lawyers and there's D lawyers. Now, there's probably not any F lawyers.
No, F lawyers don't get
out. So at least they passed.
So, and as I said, when you're in law school, especially your first year, you get into what's called study groups, where, you know, five or six students will get together and kind of study together and discuss cases, almost like smaller little study groups. And usually they'll start preparing an outline for the class, because in law school, you have so much information presented to you during the course of a class, and it's just so much stuff, you have to basically do an outline to break it down for you. Because it's the only way to kind of condense the information into something that's manageable. So those other books I was telling you about, they have kind of canned outlines too. So, I mean, they could, if you wanted to, you could basically get one of those books and just have the briefs and have the outline and be like, eh, I'm just going with this. But, you know, I don't think, again, that's the right way to do it. It's probably, you do it the old fashioned way. So,
well, it depends on how what's your point? Is your point to learn or is your point just to get through?
Yeah. Now, if you've ever seen that movie, The Paper Chase, that's an older movie.
I know of it and I probably saw it at some point, but that movie's got to be 30 years old, isn't it?
Yeah. And it's a very old school kind of law school type setting. And I think they even get together and they go to like they rent a hotel room and they like lock themselves away in a hotel room to study. And they're going over their outline and all this stuff. And I think maybe some of the plot is somebody destroys one of the outlines or something, and it's a kind of a big deal.
I have to watch. So, I remember it being a good movie, but I couldn't even tell you who's in it other than there's some old dude that was in it that had been in several movies as an old dude. He played a regular old dude.
He's an old dude.
Yeah, but I could not remember his name.
Now, your first year, there is a lot of reading. A lot of reading, a lot of reading, a lot of reading. It's probably the most intense part of law school. By the time you get through your first year, you're kind of like, whew. So my eyesight actually got exponentially worse after my first year of law school, I think, from reading so much.
Wait, you know, it's funny, Sydney, having been through med school, the first year of med school is really tough.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people, I remember she heard, don't get discouraged. It gets better after the first year. The first year is the toughest year of med school.
Yeah. Oh, I hated my first year of law school. It was not pleasant.
So just put your head down and be ready to get through it, huh?
Yep. Now, some differences about law school than like undergrad. The first is the law library. If you've ever been in a library, it's pretty quiet in there. Law libraries are silent. I mean, no one talks in a law library. If you talk, I mean, it better be a whisper. and people will look at you. People come up to you and tell you to be quiet. I mean, I told people to be quiet because it's just one of those things. Like, you're quiet in a law library.
It's like being in church, huh?
Quieter than being in church.
Quieter than church?
Yeah. I mean, it's silent. So, but it's good because you need that when you're really trying to concentrate on these different ideas and try to really concentrate on what you're reading. You have to have complete silence, pretty much.
That makes me want to go to the nearest law library and run around inside banging pans together.
Oh, yeah, you would be shot.
Well, I bet I could find a lawyer to represent me.
My favorite thing about the law library at my law school, and I transferred law schools between my first and second year.
I remember that.
Yep.
The first one was too cold.
Yeah, it was in Ohio, and I was like, I'm going to Florida.
Yeah.
But that the law library in my first law school, that was about the time that Napster came out, and they had high speed internet. So my music catalog grew
exponentially
during that time too. Because I was in the library pretty much all day long, and so I would just queue up a bunch of things and plug in my computer to the little cord there and just download tons and tons of music.
I don't think you should be admitting that, counselor.
I mean, in theory, I could have done that, but right. I did not do that.
I didn't think you would, because that would be a clear violation of the laws that cover that, whatever they are.
Statute of limitations is probably run on that, I think.
Do you think?
I sure hope.
Unless it comes from first notice.
You better edit that out.
You think? All right, I'll take care of that for you. Depends on who's offering to pay me more.
So, usually your grades in law school, there's not many assignments. Legal research and writing, there are assignments, but in the other classes, it's basically just a midterm and a final are pretty much your only grades. So you better do well on those.
Well, here's what I'm wondering now. In med school, after you get through med school, you go into residency, mm-hmm. where you kind of get to practice what you've been learning. I mean, you do your second and third year mostly anyway. You're practicing what you've been learning, but then residency, you really do. Is there any kind of residency type program that you go through as a lawyer to know that you can actually put into real practice what you've been learning in the books? Or is it just pass the bar and hit the streets?
Pretty much pass the bar and hit the streets. I mean, there are some kind of bridge the gap type programs out there that teach you how to be a better lawyer. Like there's trial advocacy, which is a class that I took, which basically you learn how to be a trial lawyer.
Well, some people intern or clerk or something too, or after they come out.
There's mock trial competitions where you do that. Some people can go to work for like the prosecutor's office, and then actually your third year you can be admitted to court and actually speak in open court as long as there's another attorney present usually. But that's going to vary state by state. Mm-hmm. I know there had a case. It was just a pretrial in a criminal matter, and there was some third-year law student who was there, and I thought she was just, like, interning. She stood up and started talking. I kind of looked at her and was like, oh, they're letting you talk? Okay. So she was giving kind of status to something, and so I was mean to her, and she started crying. No, I'm just kidding.
That's terrible. That's what you got to do with those law students. Put them in their place.
Well, it's the story of the old elephant in the chain.
The elephant in the chain. I don't know that story.
Well, this is a story Kyle told me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Kyle and I both do Brazilian jiu-jitsu.
Right.
And he was training with this one person. He had trained with this guy since he was a white belt. And now he's a brown belt. And the guy could always tap him out.
I'm glad to see he's not racist with his belts.
Yeah. I'm a purple belt. I don't know what that means. And so So the guy told him, he said, Kyle, and this is like the most like martial artisty type thing you would probably hear Brazilian jiu-jitsu. He said, Kyle, he goes, you're very good. You could probably tap me out, but you don't do it because you don't think you can. And he's like, you're basically like the baby elephant in a circus where they put a chain on him. And so the baby elephant can't break that chain. But then the elephant grows and gets bigger. It could easily snap that chain once it's bigger. But it doesn't, because it's been trained to think that it can't break that chain. You are that baby elephant, Kyle, and now you can break that chain. You need to break through. So that's like maybe the same thing with like these younger lawyers. You just smack them around a little bit, so they always think like they can't.
So they think, oh, I better take it easy here. I'm getting in over my head.
Yeah, I'm gonna watch out for that Mike guy.
I have to remember that about the chain baby elephant.
Yeah, I always like that story though.
Of course, the circus is closed now, so you're not gonna see any of those anymore.
No, thank goodness.
Yeah. Between them and the SeaWorld, you know, what are we going to do? There's nowhere left to abuse animals.
So finals weeks are always cram sessions. You're going over your outline, meeting with your study group a little bit, but I didn't really find it too helpful to meet with my study group during that whole panic of finals and when you're kind of going through there.
You like to panic alone rather than panic in a group.
Huh? I will tell you, my house was always the cleanest it could possibly be during that time of year because I would constantly keep everything clean. I'm like, okay, everything's clean. Now I can study. But I would always put off studying as much as I could so I'd make sure the house is clean.
So you did the cleaning to avoid studying, huh?
Oh, yeah. Everything was perfect in my house, and I would study.
Yeah.
So now your last semester, well, actually, before your last semester, one thing you have to do to become a lawyer is you have to take what's called the MPRE, which is the Multi-State Professional Responsibility Exam. And that's the lawyer ethics exam. And there's a class you can take in law school called Professional Responsibility. I think you have to take it, actually. So I took that my second year, and then I took the MPRE immediately after that, because you don't have to have graduated law school before you take the MPRE. You can take it while you're still in school. So I registered for it early and took it early, all that information was still fresh in my mind. And I actually didn't even study for the MPRE because I had taken that class. It's not
you passed it with flying colors.
Sure. So
sure, let's say that.
But it's not super difficult if you
pay. No one will ever know. That's not a matter of public record.
If you paid attention in professional responsibility, the MPRE is not too hard. So
that's the way I went through college. I never was great. It was grades or anything, but I didn't like to study.
Yeah.
But I went to all my classes. Mm-hmm. I paid attention in class and took notes. So when the test came around, I could always get at least a C.
There you go.
So I did go. And I did listen. I just didn't study a lot.
C stands for counselor.
Yeah, that's right. I'd look at my notes right as I'd walk in for the test. I'd go over my notes, and I'd remember it just long enough to get through that test. Now, the next day, you ask me, and I don't know nothing.
See, I think that's probably kind of how I went through undergrad as well. I didn't study a ton. I did study some, but I didn't study a ton. But that would not cut it in law school. You have to study. At least for me, it wouldn't. I had to study.
That's why my education ended right after my undergraduate degree. Me and school were not. We barely got along.
So usually you register for a bar prep class in your last semester of school. And so you have your graduation from law school, and you get to wear your cap and gown. And I believe it's universally purple is the color that all the lawyers wear.
Really?
Yeah.
That's an odd color.
Yep. And then you get all the pictures with your parents and family and whatnot, and go out to dinner, celebrate. And it's like, yeah, I graduated law school. And then it's like, got to start studying for the bar exam tomorrow. So it's kind of a short lived type thing. It's nice, but it's also like, okay, now it's time to take the bar exam. The bar prep class is kind of almost like law school all over again. And you go sit in lectures, and they tell you what to expect on the bar exam and how to take the bar exam. And then that's usually like in the mornings, and then in the afternoons and evenings, you go home and you study.
Is it a multiple choice test?
Well, I'll get into that a bit more, but yeah, there is a multiple choice section on it.
I always wonder why they call it the bar exam, because of course, you know, you always make the jokes about going to the bar, but was it short for barrister?
Well, in the courtrooms, there's like a bar which separates the where people sit and watch and separate where the lawyers and the judge they are. So basically, in order to come past that bar, you had to have passed the bar. It was the slang.
So it's kind of a play on words, if you will.
Yeah. Yeah. So pass the bar.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, the bar prep was kind of like a regular law school class. And I treated it almost like a job. I'd get up and go to that class. And then after class was done, I'd stop and have lunch. And then I'd go home and study until probably 5 or 6. I'd have dinner, watch a little bit of TV, and then study a little bit more, and then go to bed and start over. So that's what I did from May through May, June, and the early part of July. That's when you take the bars in July. So now the bar exams do differ state by state. I think it's a 2-day test in every single state, and one day in every state, I'm pretty sure, is called the MBE, or the multi-state bar examination. And that is a test on common law. So it's not actually on state specific law, but it's these kind of generic common laws you learn. And they're pretty much diabolical multiple choice questions. So there might be multiple right answers, but one of them is more right than the other.
Oh, I hate those kind.
Yeah. And this test is 200 of them. And
because you can't eliminate any like that. when some are more right than others. Yeah. You know, yeah, it's not like, oh, no, that's wrong because that doesn't fit. So that's usually the way I take multiple choices. I eliminate the ones, and then try to get it down to maybe two.
Yeah.
And then take a good guess from there.
I think the test is 200 questions, and I think I did about 3,000 practice questions leading up to it. I did 3,000 of these practice multiple choice questions trying to get ready for it.
Mm.
So, well, and for example, like a common law question might be like a criminal law question. And burglary under common law was the breaking and entering into the residence of another during the nighttime. And that's like the common law definition of burglary, I think, if I remember correctly. And so
it's been a while.
Yeah. And so the question might be like, have to turn on the fact that like it give you this whole set of facts, but it won't say it was the nighttime or something like that. You know, and obviously now burglary doesn't just have to be during the nighttime. But
no, they burgle you all the time anymore.
But, you know, under common law, that was what it was, and that's what you're tested on. So it's really kind of it doesn't really test you how well you're going to be a lawyer in any jurisdiction. It just basically tests how well you can take the bar exam almost.
It's a comprehension type thing. You know, are you reading? How thorough are you? And then how well did you comprehend what you've learned?
Yeah. So, and I think everybody should have to take it because I did it. So there.
Yeah. All right.
And the second day is can be state specific. So I took the bar exam in Florida, and the second day of the Florida bar exam had essays which dealt with only Florida law. So it wasn't common law; it's actual Florida law.
A lot of surfing questions.
Yeah, a lot of surfing questions.
Yeah,
questions about Disney. Yeah. Things like that. Space shuttles.
How to get a fast pass?
Yeah, and there also were some Florida specific multiple choice questions as well. So now that was called that was how Florida did it. Now in West Virginia, I took the bar exam in West Virginia as well, and that second day they had what was called the MEE, which is the multi-state essay exam. And it was not geared towards West Virginia law specifically, but it was, again, that kind of common law stuff, but it was essay form and not multiple choice. So that's a two-day test. They are not fun. When I took the Florida bar, I was in a room in Tampa at the convention center, and I was jammed in there at these horrible little wooden tables, and it's just nerve-wracking. It's horrible.
And I'm assuming that when these essay tests, two or three lines doesn't get it, huh?
Oh, no. And it's as fast as you can write, too. Your hand's cramping up. You're trying to get it all in there.
Do they still write, you think, now? Or do you think now it's done on a computer?
You could get some sort of exemption to write on your computer or to type on your computer.
I mean, do you have to be disabled or something?
At the time I took it, you had to have some sort of special need to be able to do it, I believe. You couldn't just do that now.
Yeah, but that was, what, 15 years ago?
Yeah, 15 years ago this July.
So probably I don't know. I just think in this day and age, probably everything would be over. Otherwise, it would just be like, we're going to teach them a lesson. All us old dudes, we did it with a pencil. By God, they'll do it with a pencil.
Yeah.
Just like you said, I had to do it, so I want everybody else to do it.
Well, they keep raising the score, too, so you have to get a higher score as well. But actually, the essay portion you could do in pen, I believe. You'd have to write in pencil because that's a little bit easier on you. But like during this
bar. What if you made a mistake? You couldn't erase.
Well, during this bar prep class, they even talk about like if you get a pen that has like a wider grip, you don't have to hold it as tight. So it's easier on your hand. You're less likely to cramp. I mean, things like that you might not think of. But it's like kind of anything you can do to try to help you.
Could you hire a secretary and just dictate and have them write it?
That would be kind of nice.
So. I'm going to be the kind of lawyer that has a secretary, so I figure I might as well start now practicing, so I'll have it down right by the time I get my degree.
So the bar exam is given twice a year, in July and February, depending on when you graduate, because you might be able to graduate in December, or you might graduate in May. So it's given two times a year, and you wait, I don't know, 6 to 7 weeks to find out whether you pass or not. And also, in addition to passing the bar, you have to have a background check. And you have to go get fingerprinted, and usually have to go to like a sheriff's office, get fingerprinted, send that in, and they do like a thorough background check on you.
We did an episode about that, so we know what those pitfalls are.
Yep. Actually, too, they look at your law school application as well. So if you lied on your law school application, but then you disclosed to the bar, and there's inconsistencies there, that can really get you in trouble. I had a friend or two that happened to.
What would you, you'd lie trying to get into a certain law school or something about
They didn't, disclose something to the law school when they were trying to get in.
Oh.
And then they disclosed it to the bar when they were trying to get admitted to the bar, and the bar did a thorough background check and said, well, you didn't put this on your law school application.
And, you know, some of them are probably those ones that, well, it was supposed to go away after a certain amount of time or something.
Maybe. But the thing is,
because we discussed that too, about you're better off to disclose it and say, I had this and just go away just in case it pops back up.
Oh, in life, that's always the best way to, especially in front of a jury. A jury will forgive you for something, but they will not forgive a liar. So you can get in a lot of trouble for doing that. So if you're going to apply to law school, we got to be forthright there as well.
And the other lawyer will stand up and say, Your Honor, I would like to put forth that he is a liar, liar, pants on fire. That's the official term.
Liar, liar, pants on fire? Yeah. Please take judicial notice this man's pants are on fire. His nose has grown to twice its size.
There's no doubt in our minds this man is a liar.
So some states even have an interview process. For example, in West Virginia, I had to actually meet with a lawyer here in Huntington. Actually, I think it was in Barbersville. And they interviewed me basically, like, why do you want to be a lawyer? Why should we admit you to the bar in West Virginia? You know, so I had to talk to them about that. And then,
how do you feel about hanging people?
And so then eventually after 6 to 8 weeks, you get your bar exam results and you find out whether you passed or not. And I will tell you the joy of passing a bar exam and
on the first try.
Yeah. Well, but just the joy of passing a bar exam is pretty much unbridled. It's great because it's like, oh, thank goodness.
Because it finally all paid off and they can't do anything else to you.
Yep. So you're like, done. I don't have to take any more tests.
And they present you with your seeds?
Yep. Then they get, no, you already have your seeds.
Oh, you already have your seeds?
They give you some Miracle-Gro.
Oh.
Yeah. That comes in the...
And it's green.
Yeah. So yeah, assuming you have already passed your background check, you've pass the bar exam, you have your MPRE done, then you can be admitted to practice law. And to be admitted to practice, you have to take a swearing in first. Now, in Florida, you can do it in front of a judge, you can do it in front of a notary, you just have to basically read something. Here in West Virginia, you actually have to go to the Supreme Court, and they have a swearing in ceremony in the Supreme Court, and they only do it certain times a year.
So, and that's the first time. I mean, you go and you do that when you say, I'm going to be a practice law here.
Well, yeah. I mean,
then you have to go there and actually be sworn in as a lawyer.
Yes. Cause I was already admitted in Florida and practicing there. And then I had to take the bar exam again in West Virginia. Mm-hmm. So once I passed the bar exam in West Virginia, then I had to go do the whole interview thing and go and the Supreme Court and all that, even though I had been an attorney already for a while. Now, some states have reciprocity. You still have to be sworn in each state.
Right. But it's like, if you passed it here, we'll give it to you there.
Yeah. But it depends on which state. Mm-hmm. And I'm seeing more and more, especially now that I've been practicing more than 5 years, that seems to be the standard time period, that they'll waive you into these different states if you've been practicing for that long. Now, the one difference is Florida. Florida will not accept any reciprocity with anybody. So it's kind of nice that I have that one taken care of.
That's because all those surfing laws are so specific.
They are. They're very specific. Do not drop in on somebody.
That's right.
It's frowned upon. So
especially when they're hanging tin, dude.
But I remember both the days I got my test results for passing the bar, and they were some pretty fun parties, and I was pretty happy about the whole situation. So,
all right, now how long do you have to practice law before you finally get to play?
I'm still riding the pine.
Aren't you ever going to get there? You've been practicing long enough. When are you going to get in the game, son?
I will say that law school, it teaches you how to think as a lawyer and how to do that without a doubt. As far as like running a practice and being a lawyer and how to bill hours and how to deal with clients and I mean all the other stuff, it does not do that. At least my law school didn't. I think probably most of them don't.
You had to take business law for that.
Well, it's not even that. There's just dealing with clients is a whole thing.
Well, that's true. I mean, that's the same thing as like Sydney said about med school, that you come out and you learn to be a doctor and, you know, you think maybe you want to open up your own practice, but then you've got to run your own business if you do that, or have somebody that you trust run the business for you. It's, you know, it's easier to just show up and do doctor stuff than it is to have to do business stuff. So that's why a lot of them work in a large practice or in a hospital or something like that, because it's just too much to take on all the business end of it. You're not prepared for that.
No, there's no way I could have come straight out of law school and hung up my shingle and started practicing law. It would have been impossible for me to do because I didn't know. I had to learn how to make money. Basically, I had no idea how to make money as a lawyer. I knew how to like write. I knew how to research, but I didn't know how to translate that into money. But you know, I mean, there's obviously more to it than money, but that's how you feed yourself at the end of the day. So well, it's kind of important.
You have to buy those nice 3-piece suits so that they take you seriously in court, right?
I don't even own a 3-piece suit.
Man, dude, you were in Florida too long.
Yeah.
They just go in there and flip-flops and cutoffs, don't they?
I don't know. I do love my khakis and a blazer. I'm a fan of that. But I wear a suit pretty frequently.
Mike Meadows, casual lawyer. You're in his office. It's legal casual.
Legal casual?
Yeah, instead of business casual.
So, yeah, that's being a lawyer in a nutshell in a podcast. Excuse me, in a podcast.
In a podcast. Is that like in a nutshell?
In a nutshell, in a podcast.
Okay.
That's my take on being a lawyer.
Well, it was suggested that we do this for people that were considering going to law school or just starting in law school.
Yep.
That they could learn something from this, and maybe it might be something where, you know, you people that have listened to it might help them in some way.
Yeah.
Prepare them for what they're doing, and they can recommend it to other people that are participating in law school, and it's a good primer for all of them.
Oh, and the reason I said engineering might be a good reason as a good undergrad degree is because if you are an engineer and also you become an attorney, pass the bar, you can also apply to pass the patent bar. And so that's a very specific type thing where you basically deal with patents and engineering and things like that. And having that engineering background allows you to be able to do that. So if you're interested in that kind of stuff, then, you know, hey, maybe you want to be a patent lawyer.
Well, or also if you were, you know, been practicing and you wanted to build a new building, you could build it yourself.
Well, I mean, I don't think engineers actually build things themselves.
But they don't?
I think they make plans. They say plans are okay. Maybe the architect makes the plans, the engineer okays the plans to make sure that all the load-bearing walls are load-bearing.
I'd be the kind of engineer that built things.
You would?
How do you think bridges got here? Engineers built them. Not a locomotive engineer, not to be confused with that. They don't build anything. They just run trains.
So do you have any questions about law school?
Well, it sounds like it's a good thing I didn't go. I don't think I'm that dedicated. I would say it's something you better be passionate about.
Well, I'll tell you what. When I was getting ready for this and I started going through, I'm like, holy cow, I did a lot of stuff.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. Now, one of you're saying was lawyering's hard.
Yeah.
It's like, should I go out and go surfing or should I study? I got a little bit of time for surfing anyway.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's definitely occasions where I came to class with sand on my flip-flops and my board shorts were soaking wet. And I was like, oh, I'm here. So that was one of the benefits of going to law school in Florida. So,
yeah, they don't do much surfing in Ohio.
No, not much at all.
The weather's a slightly cooler up there.
But I will say, for whatever reason, when I was going to law school or getting ready to go to law school or thinking about it, a lot of lawyers and a lot of people told me, like, don't do it. Just don't do it. It's a bad idea. You don't want to do it. It's too much work. You're going to be unhappy with it. Whatever. It is, I will say it is something that's a big decision. And you can't just think like, oh, I'll be a lawyer and it'll be great because I'll be a lawyer, which is kind of what I always thought. And I did not have a ton of personal or professional satisfaction with my job for probably quite a long time. And I think since I've moved back home and started practicing here in West Virginia, I am much happier here practicing. And I don't know if that's because I'm surrounded by my family and things like that, or if it's just the legal climate here I like a lot more or what. But
it's us, Mike.
Yeah.
You're probably glad to be back with
it's
us.
It's probably my family. But
professionally,
I am super happy, and I feel like rejuvenated with being a lawyer, actually. So.
Well, I always thought that the main qualification of being a lawyer was someone who likes to argue. Because when I was growing up, when I'd get in trouble with my parents, my mother would say, Tommy Smurl, I hope that one day you grow up to be a lawyer because all you ever do is argue. So no. I figured that was the main requirement. As long as you like to argue or you argued a lot, then you could be a lawyer. So I missed my calling.
I don't know. I mean, that could be one quality that might make you a lawyer.
I don't think so. I don't.
Well, I didn't say a good lawyer. Yeah. I didn't say a good lawyer. I said it might be one quality that makes you a lawyer.
A lawyer.
I think, I don't know. I think being a people person has become more important to me as a lawyer because if I'm in front of a jury, I don't want them to see me just up there arguing. I want them to side with me and like me.
Right. So. Yeah. Well, they confuse me on a lot of things. I mean, I also grew up thinking my middle name was Dammit. Tommy Dammit. So when I wrote that on my paper in first grade, when they said, write down your full name, and I wrote Tommy Dammit Smurl, they didn't think that was very funny.
Well, that's going to bring us to
Legal Brief.
So Legal Brief is a part of the show where I ask Tommy some different terms or things we talked about in the show, and I see if he can remember what they are.
Well, let's just make it multiple choice. Don't give me any essay questions. I don't think I'm up to that.
You can answer the one that's most right.
Okay.
This is going to be an acronym heavy Legal Brief.
Oh no. Okay. Well, I can make stuff up for this.
I always enjoy what you make up for acronyms. So that's kind of why I like to do this. What does LSAT stand for?
LSAT. I don't know if you ever said that. Law school aptitude test.
You got a 75% on that one.
Oh damn.
Admission test.
Admission test.
Yeah.
Well, I came close. At least I didn't say altitude.
Yeah. Well, bonus question. What is the range for an LSAT score?
Range is 120 to 180.
Hey, look at that.
I'm almost there.
What is the Socratic method?
The Socratic method is when, is that the IRAC thing?
No. Oh,
that's a different thing. Yeah. Okay. Well, it's determining the problem and presenting an argument and bringing it to conclusion. Is that the IRAC thing?
Yeah.
Well, then I obviously don't know what I'm talking about.
What do you think the Socratic method is?
The Socratic method means that an old Greek guy is going to sit down and tell you what for.
Well, how do you think he told you what for?
In a diplomatic manner.
And how did he use his diplomatic manner?
He listened to both sides and then made a determination.
Did he ever do anything specific, like ask questions?
Yes, he asked questions like you're doing now.
The Socratic method.
He asked questions till he dragged him out of the poor dumb bastard he was talking to.
The Socratic method, it's a form of basically asking questions to stimulate critical thinking.
Oh, there you go. Well, I wasn't thinking too critically.
So, okay, what is the IRAC method?
Well, I just did that, basically. That is
what do you use the IRAC method first?
To break down a case.
Yep.
And it's the, you identify what the main factor is in it, and then you do something else with it, and then you reach a conclusion. With that I at R at A and C, and it stands for something.
It stands for issue, rule, analysis, conclusion.
Exactly.
Yep. And also, that's not only is a good way to break down a case, but that's a great way to organize your legal writing as well. So if you're writing an argument or some sort of motion, or if you have a memorandum of law you're writing, a great way to say, well, here's the issue, judge, and you put the issue, and this is what the rule is, and here's my analysis of this case with this rule. And here's a conclusion. You should rule for me. That's you know, basically it. So,
all right.
That's the IRAC. It's kind of a way of thinking. Okay, more acronyms.
Oh no.
MBE.
MBE. Multiple bar exam.
Multi-state bar examination.
Multi-state. Well, it should be MSBE then.
That's the multiple choice portion. That's 200 questions. That's usually the first day of every bar exam.
Okay.
What does MEE stand for?
Multi-state essay exam.
There you go.
I learned from my last one there.
That's the second day in some states. Not every state does the MEE. Like, for example, Florida didn't, but West Virginia did. Other states do. So.
And it's all about me.
And then the last acronym, MPRE.
MPRE. It sounds like sounds like the NPR, MPRE, multi-state people read exams.
Multi-state professional responsibility exam.
Yeah.
That's the ethics portion.
Yeah, where you find out you don't have any.
And today on MPRE, we talk about ethics.
And your sweaty balls.
All right, now the final question. This is probably the most important question I'm going to ask you on Legal Briefs.
I don't know.
True or false, I downloaded music on Napster without permission during law school.
False, I believe.
Yep, that's it. Would be right the correct there. Answer. We're going to go ahead and cut it off right there.
Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Doctor, Lawyer, Indian Chief.
And thanks to the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for the use of their recording studio. Their podcasts include Mabim Bam, Sawbones, and Still Buffering, as well as many other fine offerings. And please, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you liked us. If you didn't, well then, not so much.
You're not supposed to say that.
You always edit that out though, right?
Usually. Good. This has been Court Appointed. I'm Mike Meadows, your co-host. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Strong. And I am just a dude.